So I have been teaching architecture in the graduate school of architecture since 2000. And I started to do a project that I'm going to show you while I was teaching seminars and studios. In architecture, we teach two types of courses. One is a studio course, the other is a seminar course. The studio course is basically a course where you learn the technique of architectural design, but you also do more exploratory or analytical type projects. I also am a practitioner of architecture. I have a practice with a partner, and our office is in Long Island City, so I teach, but I also build things. So the project that I'll show is an installation. It was at the Studio Museum in Harlem in 2004 in a show called Harlem World. And I saw that the book Harlem World was on your reading list. Yeah, so the show was, it kind of took that title. It was called Harlem World, Metropolis's Metaphor. And I developed this project in response to the invitation to participate in the show, but then I also developed the project from a paper that I had written earlier, which was called Black Bodies, Black Space, Awaiting Spectacle. And that space, that paper dealt with the way that black bodies are positioned in space and how they're kind of spectacularized. So it's a condition of vision, one where the black body is recognized first by sight, and then is kind of sensationalized as a result. And when I wrote this paper, for me as an architect, it was very easy to draw off of cultural criticism, literary criticism, post-colonial criticism, but it was hard to draw off of architecture criticism. So the paper ended with the question of the city, the idea of the black city, and that's the project I'll show. Okay, I'm going to show two things first, which are these demographic maps. This is, maybe you know this site, Social Explorer. It's by a professor at Queens College. And these are maps that show the development, like migration, in the city over time. So this is New York. This is a map of migrations of the white population in New York from 1910 to 2000. And this kind of map was a resource. It draws from census files, and then it pictorializes movements in space. So it's a kind of great tool. This one is the movement of whites, and this is the movement of the black population. And usually with these maps that map black and white populations, they tend to be the inverse. So the negative of one is the positive of the other. Okay. So anyway, so this kind of is a little bit of a background for the way I approached the project. I'm going to show the installation and I'll talk over it. It's about 12 or 13 minutes, this video. It's called The Black City. And it's sited in Harlem. But Harlem is only one of the cities. The Black City could be any city in the United States. And I started with Harlem. So the installation begins with the idea of the Black City as a kind of psychic phenomenon. And it moves toward the idea of the Black City, the reality of it as a physical phenomenon. And the project bridges between the two, the kind of lived condition and the almost like, supra-normative condition, like something that's in the mind or something that's kind of symbolic or even felt. So basically, I'm not going to read the text. I'll just talk around the text and explain it. But I will stop here. So this is a really important diagram for the project, which basically explains the whole logic of it. And the installation unpacks the diagram, but I'll just talk about it a little bit. There are actually two ideas of the city in this project. One is the idea of the Black City as an exploration of the dynamics and concepts that are that shape the reality that Black people live in. So it's that clear, an idea of the Black City, but it's also just a kind of condition of Blackness as otherness, where you don't have to be Black to inhabit that space. And what I've done in this project, you won't see images because I very much have fought against using images, kind of stereotypical images of Black people. And very often in architecture projects or other projects, a Black person is kind of put in the project to sort of symbolize that there's a social sensitivity. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the project is socially sensitive, but the body there kind of gives it the aura that it is. And so I was very much trying to work with what was underneath the images. So I started with images, and I was trying to get at the operative elements below the images. So the Black bodies in this project are represented by census statistics. And the statistics kind of are shown at different scales. So there's a scale of the world to the United States, United States to New York, New York to Harlem. And the project is about zooming in to Harlem, looking at the sort of systems that it's a part of. Okay, so I should let it play more. Right, so this is basically an idea that the Black City is framed within statistics and is affected by policies which are implicit and explicit, things like laws or cultural codes or mores. And then this image is just really about where I started. So the project started with the literary idea of the Black City, and these are all the different names for Harlem that I could find in literary work. So they present this mythic image of Harlem from the positive to the negative. And then these are this kind of statistical image of Harlem, which is very dry, and it's all based on data. So it has to do with demographics, statistics that kind of map the development of different groups of people and compare them relative to each other. So I was using GIS statistics, which is geographical information systems that are tied into the census statistics, to give an image to the data. So when you fill out a census, because you have an address, all of the data is keyed into the address. But again, I was not really wanting to show geography. Everything is shown more abstract, so it's just on a grid. What these are the census tables that I actually use for the different areas to visualize the concepts. These are concepts of the Black City. And this one deals with the concept of minorities. And typically in statistical charts, minorities are represented with pie charts. And so part of what I'm doing is playing with the representation of the statistics at the same time that I'm visualizing them. So I'm trying to spatialize the statistics. Okay, so actually part of the show is missing. But what you're seeing here is the concept of white flight and the corresponding concept black belt, which deal with the migration of blacks and whites. So similar to the social explorer maps that I showed in the beginning that kind of show the movement of people across the United States, that's what these are mapping, and they end up being inverses of each other. So when I started this project, I kind of began in a way from a social sciences perspective, but without really having any grounding in the social sciences. But I was curious about terms like upward mobility, glass ceiling, black belt, white flight. They're terms that are used to explain concepts that are also represented in statistics. And what I was wondering was whether the statistics came first or the concept. Like, was there this phenomenon that people wanted to talk about and that they had to find a new phrase or a word to encapsulate it? Did the data come first or the concept? This one is a map of university enrollment and incarceration rates. And it was not surprising to me to find that for blacks and whites, they're inverse of each other. But to see it makes it palpable. So one of the things that I wanted to do and that I'm still working on is making the effects visible to the public, and to make them something that, by making them visible, making them something that it might be easier to talk about. So this talks about the two aspects of the Black City, that it's a lived condition and that it exists, but that it's a condition that doesn't really exist, and that the people who inhabit it are kind of invisible. And I'm playing with notions like Richard Wright's concept of the invisible man, when I write things like that. So this part of the installation maps the dynamics of the Black City, and I conceive the dynamics as the field. Actually, it's like the field that we all operate in. So it's the field that shapes everything, and it's the field of the power structure. And so it's characterized by certain dynamics, which have to do with migrating and mixing, policing and displaying. These are characteristics that seem to me to really be critical in any discussion of the Black City, like the aspect of criminalization, the aspect of movement and migration and mixing and fear of mixing. They're kind of key characteristics of the city. In contrast to the dynamics of the city, which are everything around you, the field that you know you're sort of brought into when you enter the world, there are tactics or techniques that are employed by people who don't operate, who don't have the power within that system, and they sort of operate within it, but also kind of against it or alongside it. And so this aspect of the project is kind of informed by the discourse about otherness when it comes to things like language. So Black language, for example, there's the quote about signifying and the work of Henry Louis Gates on the signifying monkey, but also the work of other theorists, Michel de Certeau, on patois and how in kind of corrupting a language, the people who adopt a foreign language make it their own. So they kind of transform it by corrupting it and make it their own. And so these are basically 12 techniques, and they're kind of techniques that are used in jazz, were used in jazz, used in the blues, used in language play, ways of disrupting an existing structure and inverting it and making it your own. I was really interested in the aspect of in signification there's the aspect of dazzling display, right? So one of the characteristics of the Black City is always being sighted or identified by sight. So the idea of the dazzling display, the display that just stuns and is so overpowering, which to me seems to be a really integral part of African American and other cultures. I was kind of trying to work with that idea in the project. So all the images that you're seeing are very abstract and kind of, even for architecture, abstract. They don't look like shapes that you've seen, and I was trying very much to not have it look like shapes that I knew, to not make it look like buildings, because it's not forming buildings, it's forming the forces behind the buildings, the forces behind the social structure. So my project in doing this is actually the Black City squared, which is the inversion or interruption and reframing of the Black City in the hopes that in the process there might be new techniques, which could be architectural or urban techniques, that could, like from an architect's perspective, that could help help reframe an architectural discourse or an architectural practice. So the images you see are, like, to me, science fiction, fantasy images, and that's a large part of it. But it's this idea of different things not different, but very specific things coming together. Like, for instance, in the studio that I taught, this is the end of the images, the students looked at not just Harlem, they looked at Miami, Chicago, New Orleans, different cities. And we analyzed the dynamics of those cities, and things that the students were looking at were much more specific than what I looked at. So I had done this project, and it became a base that the students worked off of. So a student in New York was looking at Red Hook, and she looked at the redlining process of, you know, mortgage lending in the city, and the development of neighborhoods based on like redlining or redistricting for voting, and the way that people are kind of positioned in the city and sort of restricted from moving or allowed to move based on these types of policies. So working with the students, it was actually really interesting because they, while I wanted the project to be much more abstract, they wanted things to be more concrete. So so we worked with very, like, it was actually very helpful for me. We worked with much more concrete realizations of like, say, the idea of migration or of policing. A student looked at policing in terms of surveillance cameras in the city, and where you can get maps of where surveillance cameras are. And what she found, which was a surprise to her, was that the cameras are actually trained more on objects than people, and that based on the way that the cameras are positioned in the city, it's obvious that our culture values objects over people. So, I don't know. So it's kind of an interesting process where sometimes you're surprised by the result that you get, and other times you sort of know what you're going to get you know, when you begin it. Anyway, thank you.
Questions?
Doorways and actually the neighborhoods, they were trained on the neighborhoods where the money was. So they weren't where, I think what she expected was that they were crime prevention measures, you know, that they would be there to sort of map the people who were, I don't know, susceptible to be criminals or whatever, but actually it was much more about where the money was and sort of securing it. And so in places where the crime rate was high, there weren't necessarily cameras in those places. There were cameras in places that were safer than like the high-risk places. Yes.
The images you showed, I was thinking of the ones referring to the language in particular. You said you were trying to get away from shapes of buildings and stuff. I'm wondering where those particular shapes came out of.
Yeah, that's a good question. One of the limits of this model is that the shapes, well, I had a kind of model in mind. There's an MIT science model that looks at phenomena like boiling, or it looks at like the flow, dynamic flows of people, flows, migrations, like flocking of birds. It's this kind of software that maps flows. And I kind of use that as a model for how I could realize these dynamics. And then, so that was one idea, this software. But then as it got realized, I was using a software called Maya. And so the images are actually limited by the limitations of the software. And now I think I could use a different software and sort of, you know, make slightly different images. But that's a problem with this.
And different movements, do they signify anything in particular, like the white diamond things or those things?
Yeah, well, the movements, that's a good question. All the movements occur on a grid. And so the way that the techniques, which are what I started with, were designed, was that they started with the definition of the word. So appropriate. Go to Oxford English Dictionary, look up the word appropriate. And when you look up the meaning of the word, actually I've done a few projects like this with the word and words. And I look for the verb form of the word because it's an action. So the action is something that can be translated into an action in three-dimensional software programming. So I move from a cultural definition to something which is more of a mathematical definition because it's an action. And so then I program that into the computer, and so the way it moves is actually a result of the action of the word. Yeah, so on the grid, each of the squares has a value, and things happen, you know, the values shift depending on the action. Yes?
Can I ask you to expand, please, on the two themes that appeared in the slide? And the first one is Black signifying language and music. And the second, and perhaps more importantly, is structures of valuation in the Black city.
Yeah. Okay. So the idea of Black signifying, I really got from the essay, The Signifying Monkey, and looking at you know, just the kind of tales of the signifying monkey on the one hand, but then also the patois example is the other, where through a kind of gamesmanship, there's this game of like one-upmanship. So I say something, you say something that kind of like, you know, raises the stakes on what I say, kind of like makes me rethink what I say, or kind of turns it over and reforms what I say. And that's kind of the idea behind the techniques in the Black city. So it's the idea that there might be techniques that could be employed that could, if you don't have very much power, that could be employed to empower you, you know, as a way of subverting a dominant order. The reason I kind of moved in that direction was that in architecture, there's a discourse in architecture about blackness in architecture, and where black architects are, first of all, said to not exist, and they do, and they have for some time. So they don't exist, there's no precedent, they have no history, and this kind of discourse is often combated with a kind of retreat to aesthetics, but it's, in my mind, a somewhat shallow retreat to aesthetics on the basis of surfaces. So some practitioners try to make things that look black or look African. And I think you can see that I was very much trying not to do that, maybe to a fault trying not to do that. So what I was interested in signification is that it's a strategy. It's like a, it's not a form. It's something that you could employ. It's not a form, it's a method. And I was looking for methods. Because methods, they can take any shape. And so So it wouldn't just be about what something looked like and, you know, whatever that was could change. It would be about how it acted, how it performed.
Can I just ask you a question? Who are the actors here?
Who are the actors?
The signifying exchange, who are the primary actors?
Well, in the Black City, it's the inhabitants, because everything is sort of based on them as numbers. So every person, you, me, we're all kind of a number. We're in some data bank. We're in multiple data banks, actually. And we're represented that way. We're represented as numbers, but then we're also represented as, you know, forms. So that was kind of where that came from. And the idea of valuation is very much part of that. It's just the idea that that there are different types of values. In architecture, we tend not to deal so much with social value. Some architects do, I think, more now. Architects are dealing with social value because in the world that we live in, you can't not deal, you know, after September 11th and Katrina, you have to deal with social things. But it's kind of a weak discourse in architecture. It has a history, though. In the same way that African-American architects have a history, there's a history of, like, social valuation or social values in architecture. Yes?
The architects deal with political economy of urban spaces. And the reason I'm asking that is because one of the things we found in the class is that Harlem is described as the most significant black urban space in the world, but it would be interesting to compare Harlem as a black urban space to the percentage of property or land, real estate, that black people actually own in Harlem over time, right? And just do a grid so that this so-called black urban space, how black is it if you don't own it, number one, or a percentage of black-owned businesses in Harlem over time, say from 1930 to 2007. That would be kind of interesting. I don't know if architects actually look at who owns the buildings and the ownership, how that drives space utilization, mm-hmm. and what happens to the population in the so-called black city.
Yeah. Actually, I think that should be something I add. Ownership. Because like, who has the rights to, you know, the space? And I mean, definitely in Harlem, there's a disjuncture between the like power of the place based on image and its kind of Harlem. If you just get books, which maybe you've done, just looking up like literary works on Harlem, it's amazing. It exists as a literary sort of cultural city, but then it exists as a physical city as well. And so kind of what Dr. Marable, you're bringing up is the like physical, the disjuncture between the physical and the maybe cultural literary, and they overlap. And they maybe mask each other, like the image of Harlem kind of masks the real base of the power, who has the power there.
But
often it, I don't know, like, isn't that part of the dynamic to sort of mask who has the power? And
exactly. I mean, one of the things I received about a year ago, one of these books that I hate, which says, these are the 100 most important black people in U.S. history. You know, like, how can you prove Du Bois should be number 3, King is number 1, Garvey's number 21? Who cares? Who knows, right? You can never prove it. Anyway, so there are these books. I got one of these books. Of the 100 people, 41 of the 100 were Harlemites. Mm. That's astonishing.
Yeah.
That means that nearly half of whoever organized this book said that Harlemite, people born or raised in Harlem, or who are identified with Harlem, Malcolm was not born or raised. He was born in Omaha, Nebraska. But he's a Harlemite, yeah. Right? He's identified with Harlem. Malcolm, Charlie Rangel, Adam Clayton Powell Jr., Marcus Garvey. You go through the list, and it's astonishing. So that you have more than any other black community on earth, this stellar group of women and men in politics and in aesthetics, in literature. And it almost never happens that way in these two fields. Who define so much, right? And yet you have this anomaly where in the same neighborhood, black people don't own anything, right? Who owns the real estate? Who owns the property? Who owns the businesses? And so this requires some explanation. That's the only point I'm making, right? And what is it, and what is the significance of that? So that to a certain extent, people are disempowered, curiously, by their prominence, in a way. You know? So you have a kind of neo-colonial situation where you have, like, black representation, very prominent black people, black folk on 125th, but most of the stuff is still white-owned. Mm-hmm. It's not all that different from the 1920s and 30s.
Although now it seems that, well, the kind of image of Harlem as a kind of black Mecca is,
yes,
like, somewhat shifting, because the reality is that it's mixing a lot more.
Yes.
So the ownership is actually living there as opposed to living elsewhere.
That's right. Well, you have Buffy's and gentrification.
Yeah.
And everything else.
Yeah.
Any final questions?
There was an image towards the end about photographic images, but the slide changed.
Was this the kind of grid with the...
I did see one of them look like the chain link fence.
Yeah, well, that was a kind of catalog of values, and that's sort of the part that I'm still working on. It's the idea that there are infinite values, and that values are many things. Like, they could be... It's the way that surfaces are marked, tagged, right? But materially. So they're kind of... that matter has cultural significance, but that, depending on where it's placed, it might be read differently. So so the idea of that catalog is that there would be a bank of surfaces that could be applied in the city, and depending on where they were, they might be valued differently. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.